Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and with Rex Tillerson in Mexico today, likely to get an earful from President Peña Nieto, with Marine Le Pen leading the presidential polls in France as she cozies up to Trump and Putin, and with Trump now reversing himself and affirming the one China policy, sorry Taiwanese listeners, now we'll talk to journalists covering the U.S. for news organizations in France, China, and Latin America. And we hear, because of the always detouring way Trump speaks, that translating him into other languages is unusually difficult. So we'll get a few examples of that. With me now are Pierre-Yves Dugas, senior U.S. business correspondent for Radio France and the leading French newspaper, Le Figaro, Diana Castaneda, White House correspondent and host of Poder Latino, a U.S. politics show broadcasting in 26 Latin American countries on the Spanish language news channel NTN24. She also wrote a book called The Trump Phenomenon. And Jennifer Chen, chief U.S. correspondent based in D.C. for the Shenzhen Media Group, a Chinese state news agency. Shenzhen is a major finance and industrial city in southern China. Jennifer, Pierre, Diana, thank you so much for joining us. Welcome to WNYC.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for inviting me, Brian.
And listeners, you help with this too. If you are consuming news about the Trump administration in any language other than English, call up and tell us what you're reading or hearing, especially if you think it's different than what we may be seeing and hearing in English. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Let me go around fast to start off. Pierre, what's Le Figaro's main U.S. headline in France today?
Well, we're trying to understand what President Trump is about and to what extent he wants to work with Europe, to what extent Europe is just an afterthought, and to what extent he is serious when he says he wants to put America first. Does it mean that he wants to put America's allies last? That's really the concern.
Diana, what's your organization's main U.S. headline today for Latin America?
Well, we are covering the decision made by the President Donald Trump about revoked landmark guidance to public schools letting transgender students use the bathrooms of their choice, reversing a signature initiative of former Democratic President Barack Obama.
And Jennifer, how about your organization's main U.S. headline today for your readers in China?
Sure. You know, my story is diplomacy, security, and U.S.-China relations. And, you know, U.S. and China relations had some issues at the beginning of Trump's transitional period, but recently have moved on the smooth path, and we're starting to see much more certainty in the bilateral relations. So we're focused on the interaction between two leaders of the countries.
Diana, let me play for you a short clip of Mexico's foreign minister, Luis Videgaray, has translated into English on Morning Edition today, reacting to the new Trump deportation plan.
I want to say clearly and emphatically that the government of Mexico and the Mexican people do not have to accept provisions that one government unilaterally wants to impose on the other.
Now, that's a lot different from the way Sean Spicer characterized U.S.-Mexico relations at his press briefing yesterday.
I would argue that we have a very healthy and robust relationship with the Mexican government and Mexican officials, and I think they would echo that same sentiment. President Peña Nieto has echoed that as well. But I think the relationship with Mexico is phenomenal right now, and I think there's an unbelievable and robust dialogue between our two nations.
All right. So angry no unilateralism or a fantastic, fabulous, wonderful relationship between the U.S. and Mexico right now, Diana?
Well, I consider that some of those words that we've been hearing from the Trump administration, like you mentioned, like fantastic, tremendous, like in other cases, fake, wrong, it's kind of the speech that Donald Trump is giving every day from the White House that sometimes sounds not logic and that consists in just repeat and repeat words. But the administration reflects something totally different. We have to remember, for example, when President Donald Trump decided to call Peña Nieto like a president who has to pay for the wall, and then Peña Nieto decided to cancel his visit to Washington, D.C. So what we've been seeing lately here in Washington is that Donald Trump says something through Twitter or to the most of members of the White House, but he's doing something totally different, because it's really important that the Secretary of State is in Mexico for the first time. It's the one of the most important trips, but it's kind of difficult for media, for even for politicians in Latin America and other countries around the world to understand his language and the message, especially when we're facing now not only the message from the White House, but also this Twitter diplomacy, that it's a new concept that we have to familiarize with.
Pierre, is the far-right leader, Marine Le Pen, really leading the French presidential polls?
Yes, she is. She's around 30% at the first ballot. The French system is a two-ballot system, and it's not clear how much more than 30% she can get at the second ballot. So it's quite possible that Marine Le Pen, who is to some extent similar to Trump, but very different at the same time. She's an ideologue. She's been working on this for years, unlike Trump. And she was hoping to meet Donald Trump at the Trump Tower a couple of weeks ago, but he didn't bother to see her. But she's trying to ride the coattails of the Trump movement to some extent.
I heard Le Pen the other week saying complimentary things about Putin. And I sort of understand why a French nationalist would want to reduce immigration and maybe withdraw from the EU. At least I understand the arguments. But why would she hold up a Russian autocrat as a model in France?
Well, I think it goes back to a certain wing of the right movement in France. You know, Russia is a Christian power. Mother Russia is something that some elements in the French are nostalgic for. And they believe that the West, the true West, is the European West, not the American West. And that Christian values are better defended by Mother Russia along with, you know, France and possibly the UK.
The true West, the Christian West.
Yes.
Russia, it's funny because Russia in the Soviet era was the center of gravity of the European left. The same country seems to have become the center of gravity for the European right.
Well, they admire Putin because he's a strong leader, because he apparently can get things done. There is also a very anti-capitalist wing to the French right, and has been for years. Being pro-market is not a good thing in the eyes of Marine Le Pen. She advocates regulation. She advocates things that are very, very, very much like things advocated by the left. So her ideology is very strong, and she is not a free market person at all.
And that's a place where the traditional conservatives in the U.S. and the new nationalist right in the U.S. are going to come into conflict, too. Jennifer, what does China think about Putin? Is he a danger to China in any way?
I think he's a friend to China. And regarding to U.S., Russian, and China, I think because many Trump's advisor on China and Asian affairs has not been confirmed, and that Trump has not formed his strategy to China or to Asia. So right now, you know, my interviews and analysis so far has to involve some guessing and prediction. But overall, I think for China, Russia is friends.
The U.S. says China can pressure North Korea to stop developing nuclear weapons and missiles. Does China care one way or the other about North Korea?
I think China will try its best to cooperate with other countries for the nuclear issues.
Deanna, I played that clip of the Mexican foreign minister translated into English as saying that they won't accept the U.S. doing anything unilaterally. That was in response to the new Trump deportation plan. Do you understand Mexico's position there? I'm sure the U.S. would say it has the right to enforce its border and deport people here illegally without negotiating with any other country. So do you know what the foreign minister was referring there to there when he said unilateral?
Well, they're talking about the Mexican government. They're talking about the immigration decisions that wasn't consulted with the Mexican part. But it's more about the double speech that the President Donald Trump is having between Mexico and Canada. Both countries are right on the borders of the U.S. And when President Donald Trump talks about Canada, he always said the word bridge, and we're going to build bridges with Canada, and it's an open doors policy for Canada. But when he refers to his south border country, he's saying that it's going to be a huge wall with a different kind of agreement when he refers to the economy and NAFTA specifically. So Mexico is having this impression that he could be the new enemy for Donald Trump, for the U.S., because Mexico is taking out all the jobs from U.S. So it's this kind of double speech between two neighbors, Canada and Mexico, what really borders Mexico, because he's a really important country for U.S. economy. So that's the main idea.
Well, the Trump administration would say Mexico is guilty of double speech when it comes to its two borders because it tries to crack down on people coming in illegally from Guatemala in the south while being all indignant about the U.S. trying to crack down on people coming in from Mexico illegally.
Yeah, if you see the numbers, the Mexican people coming to U.S., the numbers are decreasing the last decade. And more of the undocumented people coming to U.S., they're from Guatemala, Salvador, and Honduras. And the Mexican authorities, they're working to try to prevent them to cross the border to U.S. But from my perspective, at the White House, and I was covering the campaign, is that he's trying to put two different enemies. Donald Trump has this quality as a political outsider to say that we have enemies like Mexico or China when you talk about economy. But with these simple words, he's talking to his followers why they don't have in their pockets the reflect of this economy growing. So this is a double narrative about an apolitical outsider, but he's now the president of the United States. So this Twitter diplomacy that we've been watching, it's really causing a lot of trouble for the White House.
We're hearing some examples of how Trump administration news is being reported in other languages to news consumers in other countries with Diana Castaneda, White House correspondent and host of Poder Latino on NTN 24, which broadcasts in many Latin American countries. Jennifer Chen, chief U.S. correspondent based in D.C. for the Shenzhen Media Group, a Chinese state news agency, and Pierre-Yves Dugois from the Radio France and the leading French newspaper Le Figaro. He's the U.S. business correspondent. And we're inviting you to call in and tell us what you've been reading, if you consume news in languages other than English, and what you're seeing that's any different from what we may be getting from the U.S. press. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And Greg in Montclair, you're on WNYC. Hi, Greg.
Thank you very much for taking my call. Jennifer, I lived in Shenzhen for 2 years and studied at Shenzhen University, so definitely a city close to my heart. What I wanted to talk about was my perspective. I am getting my PhD and writing my dissertation on Sino-Russian relations right now. So I've been reading a lot of Russian and Chinese language press on the issue at hand and Donald Trump's election. And so, you know, the Russians are still fairly positive from their political science perspective about Donald Trump. In the mass media, he's been increasingly characterized as a clown, as a charlatan. But the political science people, particularly guys like Sergei Karaganov, who actually has Putin's ear, are still positive about his direction. In terms of China...
Greg, let me follow up on that for a second. Why the change? And I've heard this from others, too, that the Russian press, which generally does what Putin wants it to do, had been portraying Trump very positively, but it turned negative in the last week or so. If that's your perception, why do you think it is?
Yeah, what I've been reading is that they're getting different directions, mixed signals from the Trump press. You know, on the one hand, he does have people in his administration who are very anti-Russia, you know, particularly his Secretary of Defense, Mattis, also the Secretary of Homeland Security, Kelly. You know, these are Russia hawks. These are not pro-Russia guys. On the other hand, you have guys like Rex Tillerson, who, of course, the Russians know very well, but now he's Secretary of State. He plays a very different role at the same time.
Now, very briefly, what did you want to say about the Chinese press you're reading?
Yeah, China, and particularly I'm reading Chinese press in relation to China-Russia relations. The Chinese are definitely very worried about Trump. They're worried that, you know, with him, the relatively stable relationship between the U.S. and China, which has existed for at least the last 8 years, but really I would say going back to the Bush administration and the Clinton administration as well, is going to deteriorate, and we're entering a new period of competitiveness. It's very frightening.
Greg, thank you very much. Beata in Red Bank. Beata, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi. I've been reading German media and listening to German programs, and they have a great, great concern, especially around the environment, because they are way ahead of America in environmental issues. And all this nonsense he talked about breaking all the rules and getting out of the Paris Agreement, the Europeans are beginning to try to do it on their own and just ignoring the U.S. They also have some concerns about Bannon and his rage about the world view that he has, the darkness. And they feel there is such a connection to what Germany experienced 70 years ago. I don't want to mention the names, but we all know what they're talking about. They're really concerned that America is self-destroying its democracy. We have fascism pure happening here, is what I see in here in Europe over and over again. They also call him an escapist president because he is not interested in doing the boring and hard work that is required to run a country. So he takes off and plays, you know, the campaign nonsense that's going on in his ridiculous place down in Florida.
Escapist president. That's interesting. Thank you. Jonathan in Oslo, Norway. Jonathan, you're calling us from Oslo right now?
Yes, I'm on Skype.
Thank you for calling in. Hi, what are you reading?
I'm reading the Aftenposten. It is a primary publication here in Oslo and generally in Norway. They have a New York and U.S. correspondent who does quite a lot of reporting. The headline from Sunday's edition was that basically the storms around him are not diminishing and that he has four reasons to be worried and one special reason to be that he can smile about. That's directly translated. The four reasons for concern are things that
I don't have time to listen to eight reasons. So give me the one most important thing he should be worried about.
Basically, restless Republicans. And the thing that he should be happy about is a jubilant Wall Street. But here in Norway, it's very they're more concerned about, I think, the Russia coziness because he is, you know, obviously Norway's proximity to Russia. There's a certain threat that's felt here as well.
Interesting. Jonathan, thank you so much for chiming in. So, Pierre from Le Figaro, on translating Trump into French, you told us that first you have to translate Trump into English and then into French. What did you mean by that?
Well, it seems that Donald Trump speaks a "don't bother me with the details" English that is hard to translate directly from that language into French. For example, he talks about big league deregulation, or he talks about phenomenal tax reduction. When phenomenal is a French word, so if I use phenomenal in French in my story, my editor calls me and said, did he say phenomenal? I mean, what is a phenomenal tax reduction? The funny thing, we should rather laugh about it, is that when you try to translate Trump's English, it sounds childish. And maybe because it is, I don't know, but it's difficult. It's not the first time. You know, Barack Obama came up with the concept of leading from behind.
Yes.
That was an interesting concept to translate also.
Also, you gave us an example of when Trump the other day said, I inherited a mess.
Yes. Yeah, I did something which I try not to do. I corrected a colleague of mine because she had translated the word mess by bordel, which literally is brothel, and it's a slang word. And I think we should be careful in using the words we use because Donald Trump is giving us 20 opportunities every day to write things that are funny and kind of ridicule him. He appears to be a caricature of himself so often. But we should be very calm and professional and careful as not to exaggerate that caricature. And the word mess, you know, should be translated as closely as possible to a proper French word. And I was struggling to find the equivalent, but eventually we did.
Deanna, have you run into any equivalent difficulties translating Trump into Spanish?
Yeah, and I agree with Pierre, because here in Washington, we familiarize with the high-level, very well-done speeches made by other leaders in the political class in D.C. But I'm going to give you an example. I was covering the press conference between the President, Donald Trump, and the Prime Minister of Israel, Netanyahu, about the conflict between Palestine and Israel and the possibility of a peace agreement between the two nations. And what Donald Trump, the president, said was like, if Israel is happy, I will be happy. If Palestine is happy, I will be very, very happy. So at the moment when you have to go in front of the camera and do the translation and send a message to the viewers in more than 25 countries in Latin America, you cannot translate literally because you're going to sound kind of a silly. So my solution is put in context the relations between the two nations, the mutual interest, and finally, the president's message.
And Jennifer, what about translating Trump for your readers in China?
Sure. I think no matter how President Trump expresses himself, our media organization will respect him because he is the president elected by American people. And, you know, I think the bottom line for my media, for Chinese media, is that we have to present news content that is proper to the Chinese audience. And our use of words in the news must serve the purpose of spreading a positive message and creating a positive environment. And for me, I think it's fine. At first, when I translate, I make sure that everything I write is based on what he really means. In addition, as a Chinese news organization, TV news has to keep, you know, a serious and formal tone in China, unlike new media, which can be quite flexible and informal. And that depends on the nature of the media format. And I think sometimes I have difficulties. For example, President Trump's slogan during the campaign, and he repeats over and over again, make America great again. And this slogan doesn't make much sense when it's translated into Chinese, and it's an awkward thing in Chinese. So some Chinese audience may confuse. Is America already the most developed country and superpower in the world? Is it a great country now? So to an average Chinese audience, you probably understand this slogan to be, you know, improving the economy and the like. But in the beginning of the election, most of the Chinese audience didn't know the story and details of the deteriorating manufacturing industry, you know, in U.S. and job loss in the Midwest in U.S. But now, you know, more Chinese people know about it, but it still doesn't naturally come to them every time when they see the slogan.
That's really interesting. Deanna, let me ask you one final question before you go, since one of the main stories today is Secretary of State Tillerson and Homeland Security Secretary Kelly meeting with President Peña Nieto in Mexico. I read that a possible reduction in U.S. aid to Mexico or cancellation of that aid altogether, about $300 million a year is the figure I read, is on the table for Trump as a way to get Mexico to pay for the wall. Do you know if that's going to be on the table today or what Peña Nieto is expected to say to the American delegation about anything?
Yeah, this is definitely going to be one topic on the table, and security and other topics about economy and, of course, immigration. But Mexico government said that it's prepared to go to the United Nations to defend the freedoms and the rights of Mexicans under international law. So it's more about this message that Peña Nieto is supposed to send today about that the way that Donald Trump is referring to Mexico is hostile and unacceptable. And the relations between the U.S. and Mexico have been tense under Mr. Trump administration because definitely the idea that Mexico will pay for a wall and Donald Trump, he really wants to build on the sort of border this wall, this is unacceptable from the perspective of the Mexican government. And that's why Peña Nieto decided to cancel a planned meeting between the two leaders.
And we should point out that even if they canceled all $320 million in aid to poor people or developmental aid in Mexico, that's just the smallest down payment on the wall, which is expected to cost tens of billions of dollars. But with that, we thank Deanna, Jennifer, and Pierre for joining us and giving us some really fascinating perspective on how you're reporting for your countries on the Trump administration and the difficulties of translating some of what he says. Thank you all very, very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.